Chapter 16, Curtain Call.
We read in many places of his tact and his urbanity, of his amiability and gentleness of his nature, of the kindness, humor, and forbearance. From every source we learn of his patience, his unbounded and unending patience. These are virtues possessed by a few, a very favored few, but possessed in equal measure by Sir John's great rival and successor, Laurier. They are virtues in public life of almost unbelievable importance. Sir Arthur Meen, in a speech commemorating Sir John A. Macdonald, 1941.
An opera begins long before the curtain goes up and ends long after it has come down. It starts in my imagination. It becomes my life. And it stays part of my life long after I've left the opera house. Greek opera singer Maria Callas.
Alex Campbell is a man of many parts. He combines amiability and good nature with an impatient drive to change things for the better, especially for his native Prince Edward Island. He challenged his province to transform and openly critiqued the status quo while setting historic records for political popularity. Campbell's core belief was that Prince Edward Island required development, but not development at all costs. It must have been an omen that Campbell was born and grew up at the corner of Summer and Winter Streets. His well-known magnetism and charisma were paired with a vigilant separation of private and family life from politics. The politician who drew energy from the crowd and masterfully worked the room was happy in solitary pursuits. The young man chosen as Liberal Party leader in 1965, due in part to his father's political credentials, was in reality more like his mother. Campbell's instincts for diversity started at home, with his attachments to a cerebral father and a creative mother. While Alex Campbell combined divergent parts, he was a man of unusual constancy. He almost never lost his temper, although he could and did with people who took politics too seriously. From his earliest days, Campbell was more likely to be listening than speaking. That aptitude for listening remained his dominant characteristic, along with his good nature and exceptional memory. The memory that Campbell credits with getting him through school served him well in public life. It earned him votes and loyalty. Campbell went beyond remembering names and details for which he was famous. He recalled and wanted to learn about feelings and context. He sensed people well and relied on intuition. In an interview as he approached his 80th birthday, Campbell said, "I never thought of myself as the smartest person in the room, but I was pretty good at getting the best answer from the room." An interaction with a group of demonstrators in the fall of 1976 illustrates Campbell's openness and good nature, as well as his Socratic style. Canadian unions called for a one-day national strike on October 14th to protest federally imposed wage and price controls, which they said constrained wages but not prices. An 800-person parade marched to Rochford Square and the steps of the Provincial Administrative Building. Campbell watched from the fifth-floor office of his principal secretary, Leonard Bradley, and said, "Let's go down and see them." He milled for a while with the protesters, many of whom he knew personally, before being invited to address the group. Campbell emphasized the need for broad collaboration and for all parties to be at the table. He was heckled by some of the crowd, at one point halting to ask them to let him speak. Campbell turned to a favorite rhetorical practice of asking the crowd what they thought. He pointed to a coffin that was a central feature of the demonstration and asked, "Now what do you think we should put in that coffin?" When someone in the crowd yelled, "Trudeau," Campbell was initially surprised and then started to chuckle. Some of the protesters joined Campbell in the laughter, and it became infectious, running through the group. Campbell recognized that his remarks were not going to go any further and wished the protesters well, reminding them of the need for a collaborative approach. Leonard Bradley cites the event as an example of Campbell's essential nature, saying, "He had great humanity. He could always see the human side." It may also have shown how Campbell could get the best answer from the crowd, that day in the form of a good laugh.
First impressions.
Notwithstanding the time he spent on the platform and in front of the cameras and microphones, Alex Campbell was at his best one-on-one. he sought out human contact and excelled at it. He was naturally curious. Conversations focused on the other person, not on the fact that he was premier. In 1972, John Barrett moved from Newfoundland to PEI to study music at the University of Prince Edward Island. Barrett rented a place in downtown Charlottetown and occasionally dropped by the Copper Grill at the Zeller's store on Kent Street for lunch. He retains vivid memories of the day that I found myself seated next to a distinguished-looking gentleman in a dark suit who was seated alone enjoying a quick lunch. He appeared quite friendly and we struck up a conversation. He was interested in where I was from, what I was studying, and what my future plans might include. Barrett says that after several minutes, it appeared that the conversation was all about me, and anxious to learn more about the well-dressed stranger, I asked, "So what do you do?" To Barrett's surprise, his lunch-counter seatmate explained quite modestly that he was the Premier of Prince Edward Island and that his name was Alex Campbell. The freshman music student, who considered himself a bit of a political junkie, says, "I was shocked to learn that I was bending the ear of the province's chief executive and embarrassed that I had not recognized him." Barrett says, "I wanted to learn as much as I could about him and the province in the short time we had together." During the ensuing conversation, Barrett says that Campbell was open and obliging. He reflects that the conversation became a highlight of his university education and says that it spoke volumes about Alex Campbell's style. Hazel Robinson moved to Prince Edward Island from New Brunswick in May 1966 with her husband John, who returned home to join the family farming operation. Hazel's early memories of PEI politics include John's parents Eric and Edith Robinson, well-known liberals, going over the election results poll by poll, figuring out who had changed their votes. In the course of the 1966 campaign, Hazel and John accompanied his parents to rallies, but played no active part. A few months later, Hazel had her first personal meeting with Alex Campbell. She was on the street in Summerside, and Campbell stopped her. As she recalls, "He knew I was a Robinson. He asked my name. He was warm and personable. After that, every time I met Alex, he knew who I was. I was always amazed that he had that ability to connect with people and to remember details. The conversation was never generic. It was always personal." Campbell was famous for picking up hitchhikers. Students knew they could count on a ride, unless the car was already full. In the spring of 1968, Tim Banks and a grade 10 schoolmate from Summerside High School decided to skip class and hitchhike to Charlottetown for the day. Banks recalls, "We were out on Water Street in the morning with the thumb out. This black car pulled over to the right." Banks, who was only 14 at the time, says, "All I can remember is staring at the face. I knew he was the Premier, but I didn't have a clue what the Premier did or who he really was." The two boys jumped in the car. Banks got in the front seat, recalling that there was a barrage of questions from Campbell. Banks figured they might as well come clean and admit that they were taking the day off school, to which Campbell responded, "I might have done that myself." Banks says that Campbell was a very warm guy to talk to, talking up a pretty good storm all the way down to Charlottetown. At Campbell's office building, they drove into the underground parking garage. Banks says, "We'd never seen a building like that before." As they pulled in, Campbell said, "Boys, this car is leaving for Summerside at 5 o'clock. I don't know what you're doing today, but if you want to drive and you're here, you have a way home. I'm going to go over there and tell the commissionaire to let you in." Campbell then took them through the basement and up a stairway to the door leading to Kent Street, saying, "Just head that way to downtown and remember your way back." After spending most of the day at the pool hall, the two boys returned in the late afternoon to the parking garage, where the commissionaire let them into the Premier's car. Banks says, "We were sitting there. Sure enough, at 5 o'clock down he came, and boom, we were up to Summerside. I remember Campbell talking about how beautiful the countryside was. We dropped my friend off, and then we went to my place. There was never a word said to our parents." Banks became an active liberal, starting out driving voters to the polls in 1970 and later organizing rallies and campaigns, eventually becoming provincial party president.
Partnership.
Marion Pearson, wife of Prime Minister Lester B. Pearson, once quipped, "Behind every successful man, there is a surprised woman." Marilyn Campbell would have disagreed. She was her husband's number one backer, and she was not surprised at his success. Alex Campbell readily concedes that he could not have done it without her. Marilyn recalls a 1967 visit by the Pearsons to Prince Edward Island, when the two couples were driving from the airport in the Campbell family sedan, with Alex at the wheel. Marilyn was riding in the back with Mrs. Pearson, who complained about the itinerary, asking, "When does one get a chance to powder one's nose?" Recalling the incident 45 years later, Marilyn Campbell says, "I didn't care for her." Alex, listening quietly to the interview, observes that Mrs. Pearson didn't care for politics. Marilyn rejoins with a good-natured two-word comment, "It showed." The brief exchange between the Campbells tells a lot about Marilyn Campbell and about their partnership. They are different people with a high degree of complementarity. Marilyn started out shy, but acknowledges that by 1978 she had gotten over it. When Alex was criticized in the media, it would bother Marilyn, who says, "I think I was too sensitive. He could let it roll off his back, but I couldn't." Asked whether she wished prior to 1978 that her husband would get out of politics, Marilyn responds, "I don't think I ever felt negatively about it. I can recall thinking sometimes how much easier it would be. I don't tend to be a negative person, but a worrier." Marilyn concedes that she was interested in politics, but when asked whether there were people whom she would rather avoid, she says, "Anyone who just lived politics, who didn't get beyond politics." Marilyn Campbell did not have time for powdering her nose. When Alex became premier in July 1966, their son Blair was 3 and daughter Heather, who was 15 months younger, had just turned 2. Their third child, Graham, would be born in January 1969, 9 months after the Ottawa Convention of the Liberal Party that selected Pierre Elliott Trudeau as leader. The Campbells referred to Graham between themselves as their Trudeau baby. With 3 children in less than 6 years, Marilyn ran a busy household. She says that politics were rarely discussed in front of the children. Their cottage, built at Stanley Bridge in 1967, became the family refuge. They spent the entire summer at Stanley, plus Christmases. Marilyn would have the car packed the day school closed. If a winter storm was forecast, Marilyn would bundle the family into the car and head for the cottage. Blair remembers that as they arrived at Stanley with a winter storm moving in, his mother would offer a defiant but gleeful, "Bring it on." During the years of Campbell's premiership, Marilyn resisted having a telephone at the cottage, saying, "People had to be pretty desperate to see him in order to get in." She says that the children had a normal family life, adding, "They'd like to have had more time with Alec, but he made up for it at Stanley." Marilyn says that the cottage was the only place we had a chance to be a family. Along with caring for the family and running a busy household, Marilyn participated in innumerable public events. True to her quiet sense of humor, she remembers the occasions that did not work out as intended. One such event was a gala performance of Anne of Green Gables, the musical, in conjunction with a visit by Governor-General Roland Michener. Marilyn set out in her long white gown and gloves, driving the family car. She didn't pay attention to the fuel gauge. Keeping the car filled with gas was something that she left to Alec. Near Hunter River, the car ran out of gas and sputtered to a halt. Marilyn was by the roadside in her gown and gloves, and the first driver to come along was a Summerside teenager whom the Campbells knew well. He drove Marilyn directly to the front door of the Confederation Center. Alex says that he was glad to see her, as he was waiting, waiting, waiting for Marilyn to join him in the reception line. When asked about how fashion changed during the 12 years in office, Marilyn says that the biggest change was that women stopped wearing hats. In the 1960s, hats were de rigueur for women. Marilyn remembers with a smile the official opening of the new St. Andrew's Church at Vernon Bridge on March 30, 1969. It was a blustery day with a wet spring snowfall that required careful driving on the 90-kilometer journey from Summerside, causing the Campbells to run late. As they hurried into the church, crossing a provisional walkway of pallets that were laid over the water-filled ditch, the wind caught Marilyn's hat and carried it into the mud. After retrieving the hat and leaving it in the car, the Campbells arrived doubly embarrassed that the service had been held up for their arrival and that Marilyn was the only woman in the church without a hat. Remembering the occasion 45 years later, the Campbells break into laughter as they head on the day of the event, recalling that they poked each other in the ribs as the first hymn was sung, "I Feel the Winds of God Today." Alex can still sing the hymn through several verses.
I feel the winds of God today, today my sail I lift. though heavy, oft with drenching spray, and torn with many a rift. If hope but light the waters crest, and Christ my bark will use, I'll seek the seas at his behest, and brave another cruise.
Alex Campbell loved public life, while Marilyn found ways to make the best of it. She appreciated the annual premier's conferences, especially as an opportunity to get away with Alex. Sometimes the children were invited. She became close to a number of the other premier's wives, notably Lorraine Robichaud, Carol Regan, and Lily Schreier. At Stanley Bridge and in Summerside, Marilyn and Alex had a group of couples and families with whom they maintained very close friendships. Joanne and Maynard Skuurman lived across the street and had a place at Stanley Bridge. When asked how the pressures of politics affected Alex, Joanne Skuurman says, It was very fortunate that he had such a good marriage. Marilyn was a great wife. He really had a lot of support at home. No one recognized this more readily than Alex, who reflects, Marilyn was a superb mother and partner.
Politics in perspective.
Politics depend to a very high degree on personalities. Character is a significant ingredient in setting the tone for a political party and for relations with opponents, ultimately for the whole polity. It was not in Alex Campbell's character to go negative. He saw the best in others and stayed above board. When asked about this aspect of her younger brother's character, Alex's sister Virginia says, "He was always very, very fair. I once asked Alex whether such and such was driving him nuts. He said, 'I choose not to let it bother me.'" Virginia adds, "His sense of humor always got him through." Campbell's good humor and forbearance were called upon regularly throughout his years in office. The Comprehensive Development Plan would not have come to pass without his combined perseverance and patience, within cabinet, with the PEI public service, with the Conservative opposition, and above all, with the federal government. Campbell's relations with Progressive Conservative Party leaders were, in the main, positive and respectful. An early challenge came in dealing with investments by Walter Shaw's government in Georgetown Industries. Almost five decades later, he acknowledges, "That was the rat that gnawed at me from inside." Whatever was gnawing at him, Campbell respected Shaw. After he left politics in 1970, Shaw continued to be a regular visitor at the legislature, where he was given a special seat outside the rail. One day Campbell observed that Shaw's aging Chrysler sedan was showing rust. He said to Shaw, "Give me your car keys for the day, Walter, and we'll get her buffed up." He had the car taken to the body shop at the Provincial Vocational Institute and returned to Shaw the following day in much improved condition. While Alex Campbell was a natural political animal who relied on his good nature to keep things from bothering him, the workload of government and the testiness of politics took their toll. Campbell suffered from eczema during the 1966 deferred election, to the point that Marilyn recalls his hands were all runny sores. Fortunately, it did not recur. After he became premier, Campbell suffered from migraine headaches when he was under sustained pressure, notably toward the end of the legislative session. Campbell regularly consumed 2-17s to deal with the headaches, and this was later stepped up to 2-22s. The pills, in turn, affected his stomach. Marilyn Campbell says, "We didn't really find out that they were migraines until after he was out of politics." Most people were unaware of Campbell's headaches, and he did not complain. His immediate office staff and a few others who worked closely with Campbell knew about them and could spot the signs, notably when he kneaded his forehead. Ann Smith says, "You could see it in his eyes." Campbell was capable of taking power naps of 15 or 20 minutes and kept a cot in a side room so that he could slip away and gain some relief. He was a good sleeper. On rare occasions when he worked late, Campbell would sleep the night on the cot. Alex and Marilyn Campbell were both heavy smokers, consuming up to 2 packs per day. Notwithstanding regular protests from their children and numerous joint attempts to kick the habit, it was not until 1988 that they finally, in Alex's words, "got that monkey off our backs." While alcohol consumption was commonplace along with smoking in political life in the 1960s and 1970s, Campbell found that a second drink was plenty for him. The energy and enthusiasm that came from interacting with people provided a much bigger boost. After leaving political life, Alex and Marilyn found that they were drinking more regularly and opted in the early 1990s to give up alcohol entirely, following a heart-to-heart conversation with longtime friend Maynard Skuerman. For the Campbells, Stanley Bridge was the best antidote to the pressures of politics and government, a true refuge. The fact that there was no telephone was neither a deprivation nor an artificial barrier. It followed from the nature and character of the place. Stanley was a place for family, and for friends who were as close as family. There were sing-songs, games, and performances. Alex would join his brother Mel and friends Maynard and Leigh Skuerman in writing and performing songs to celebrate birthdays, anniversaries, and other occasions. Alex was famous for finding things at the New London dump and dragging them home. He loved to go out on the river and to the North Shore dunes with his boat. Blair Campbell says, "We treasured our time at Stanley. As a family, it was our sanctuary." For the children, Blair says, "The boat trips were huge for us. We'd pack up a lunch and go out to the sand dunes. There would be other families out there. Sometimes we'd come back in rough weather. Dad would sit at the helm and we'd be down below in the cabin. Dad loved it. The waves were coming over the bow and the rough weather. We'd start hitting the waves and Mom would say, 'Ooh, Alec,' and we'd all laugh." Alex's sisters, who also had places at Stanley, recall, "We would stop at the sandbar on the way out to the dunes and scoop up a bucket of mussels. One day we went out and found Alex sitting there on the bar in the middle of the bay, on an old lawn chair he had found at the dump, sorting mussels. That was the sort of thing he would do, to get a reaction and a laugh." Asked whether their brother could lose his temper, Harriet recalls one day when Alex was getting his car filled with gas at the station in Stanley Bridge. Just as he was completing his business, a fellow came along and challenged him on something political. Alex stepped on the gas. The fellow at the service station had just made a little flower bed, and Alex went right through it. He felt badly about that and went back later to apologize. For Campbell, it was not the political challenge, but the fact that it happened within the sanctuary of Stanley Bridge that caused the uncharacteristic burst of temper. Father Francis Bolger had a cottage at Stanley Bridge and became good friends with Campbell, starting out with casual meetings at the service station. Bolger would be invited to gatherings at Campbell's cottage as frequently as 5 or 6 times in the course of the summer. He says, "We didn't talk politics at all. I might bring up something political from time to time, and Alex would say, 'Let's not bother with that today.'" Father Bolger was sometimes invited by Campbell to join him on weekend excursions to public events, such as a day trip to the Egmont Bay Exhibition. Campbell would initiate the invitation by asking, "Do you want to go for a drive?" On those journeys, there was no difficulty filling the conversation with non-political stories or talking about historical events, island personalities, laughable moments, or their shared appreciation of the landscape. In addition to the refuge of Stanley Bridge, Alex and Marilyn Campbell took occasional vacations. These might consist of a few extra days in conjunction with the annual Premier's meetings in August, or a week following the closing of the legislature in the late spring. The timing of the spring getaways could be variable, and there were years when they were missed due to other obligations, such as elections. Generally, Alex needed the break to relax from the accumulated tensions of the legislative session and the build-up of migraine headaches. Bermuda was a favorite getaway, where the Campbells liked to vacation with one or more couples from their circle of friends in Stanley Bridge and Summerside. After Alex relaxed for a few days in Bermuda, his mischievous side would emerge, such as when he went down the hallway of the hotel, altering the breakfast orders that had been hung out on the doors. On another occasion, he came over to visit Maynard and Joanne Skuerman, who were staying at a different hotel, and started up all the scooters that were parked down front. Skuerman says, "Alex never put on airs. It never went to his head." As was the case with boats and cars, Campbell's playful side came out when he was around scooters. Alex Campbell attracted people who preferred the political high road. By 1974, this philosophy was being passed on to the next generation in his cabinet, as illustrated by the experience of newcomer George Henderson. Bruce Stewart was a mentor to several cabinet ministers who were newly elected in 1974, including Henderson, Catherine Colbeck, and George Proud. Henderson recalls his first legislative session after being appointed Minister of Fisheries, and his first question from the opposition, saying, "Leo Rossiter was my critic. Leo came on pretty strong, even stronger with the supplementary, and I came back pretty strong. I knew the fishery inside out, and I thought I had done pretty well and had laid him out." After the session adjourned for the evening, Henderson and Stewart were walking back to McLaughlin's motel where they shared a room. Henderson asked Stewart how he thought he had done. Stewart took a little time before responding in his unique drawl. "Well, George, you certainly knew your stuff, but you might have come on a little strong. Sometimes when you throw mud, you're throwing the ground away from under your own feet." Henderson says, "I never forgot it." Another of Campbell's ministers, John Maloney, was almost the antithesis of a politician. After Leonard Bradley was appointed as Campbell's principal secretary in early 1976, he says that Maloney became one of my greatest teachers. Bradley says that the media did not like Maloney because he didn't play the game. One evening when the two were discussing things in Maloney's woodworking shop at his home, Bradley was given advice that he has retained for a lifetime. Maloney told him, "Beyond government and politics, you should have something to do with your head, your heart, and your hands."
Vision.
In the fall of 1993, John Maloney was MC for a reunion of the University Study Group, the initiative that he and Dr. Malcolm Beck co-chaired in the 1960s to advocate for a single university. The reunion, styled as the final meeting of the study group, marked 25 years since the 1968 policy statement that led to the creation of UPEI and Holland College. Maloney introduced Alex Campbell as guest speaker with the following words.
"Alex Campbell is the longest-serving premier in the history of our province. In my 9 years as one of his ministers, I noted his sensitivity to characteristics and movements in society while they were still in embryo. His ability to determine beginning patterns in an otherwise random mass of events was the quality that enabled him to preside so competently over the great changes that took place during those years."
The April 1968 announcement that Prince Edward Island would have a single university and a new community college took most Prince Edward Islanders by surprise. 18 months earlier, in October 1966, Alex Campbell was less than 3 months in office when he spoke to a regional meeting of student leaders held at St. Dunstan's University. He shared with the student leaders his concern over what he called the loss of brain and brawn from the Atlantic region to other parts of Canada, and emphasized the role of post-secondary education in reversing the trend, telling the students, "Perhaps the next time you delegates return to our province, you will be greeted by a banner reading, 'University of Prince Edward Island.'" It was remarkable that Campbell spoke so directly on the controversial question less than 3 months after becoming premier. In the spring of 1968, following two unsuccessful attempts to achieve better management of post-secondary resources and greater cooperation between PEI's two universities, Campbell showed that he had been looking at the situation in embryo in October 1966, and that he understood the need for vision combined with leadership, political support, and the right timing. Observers who cite the reforms in post-secondary education as an example of Alex Campbell's vision might equally point to his views on regional cooperation, or all aspects of education, or the environment and renewable energy, land use, building up the public service, modernizing the economy, or taking a more inclusive approach to politics. Campbell's most sustained efforts were aimed at decentralizing the Canadian economy and building a sustainable future for Prince Edward Island. The economic positions that Campbell articulated as early as 1967 can be seen as a quest for local specificity, viability, esteem, and quality of life. He promoted a vision for Canada's national economy based on competitive and complementary regional inputs. His practical quest was for self-reliance for Prince Edward Island and the Atlantic region. In philosophical terms, Campbell's arguments were a forerunner of debates about globalization that dominated the 1980s, or ongoing debates about the environment and limits to growth. On some issues, such as his advocacy for the Northumberland Strait Causeway, Campbell was initially more concerned about keeping up with the crowd than getting out in front, but that changed with the 1966 ferry strike. In other areas, notably the implementation of Medicare, he was a fiscal conservative who waited for the crowd to go first. On all questions, he was a willing listener with an open mind and heart. He didn't always get it right. Two examples are the 1971 decision to bring in the Public Gatherings Act or his 1978 post-election criticism of the public service. However, unlike many politicians, Campbell was willing to admit error. The most glaring area where Alex Campbell and all Canadian leaders and governments overlooked embryonic evidence in the 1970s was the onset of an aging society. The surge of young voters who supported Campbell in the 1970 election and the generation of students who filled the newly constructed schools would become the demographic wave that carried the median age of Prince Edward Islanders from 25.1 years in 1972 to 42.6 years by 2012, for an increase of 17.5 years in the median age in the space of four decades. The young people who joined a growing public service or who became teachers with upgraded credentials in the late 1960s and early 1970s would enjoy progress through the ranks and generous defined benefit pensions before the costs were fully calculated, even though the Campbell government practiced austerity for its final 4 years in office. Medicare, which would become the largest long-term commitment, cost the Prince Edward Island government less than $2 million in its first year of operation, after being introduced with a commitment that the federal government would pay half of the national average cost. While a long-term trend of increasing cost could have been calculated, it mainly wasn't. If the long-term cost had been fully calculated, it might have been approached more prudently, but it would still have had to be undertaken. Prince Edward Island of the mid-1960s had no choice but to develop and transform. Governments in Canada and throughout the Western world were turning to a more activist role, with policies and finances that reflected two decades of post-war development. For Prince Edward Island, the timing was right and the need was urgent. Over and above the costs, the benefits were greater and more difficult to calculate in terms of new opportunities, new esteem, economic growth and prosperity, and public and private resources redirected from subsistence and from crisis management. As longtime MLA Robert Campbell said when Alex Campbell stepped down in September 1978, "People are living better. There's more money around now than there ever was."
Leadership.
Political history ultimately turns to the realm of what if. What if Alex Campbell had not shown up? What if he had chosen to focus on his young family and developing law practice instead of getting into political life at the age of 31? What if the delegates to the 1965 Liberal Leadership Convention had not been convinced of the need for new blood, which is in effect what they voted for? What if a handful of Prince Edward Islanders had voted the other way in the 1966 election or stayed home? While historical outcomes depend to a large degree on circumstances and trends, nothing meaningful happens without leadership. A photograph taken at the opening of the Prince Edward Island Legislature on February 18, 1971, speaks volumes about how necessary it was for Alex Campbell to show up. Campbell was almost 5 years in office, opening his fifth full legislative session as Premier, 2 years into the Comprehensive Development Plan, and a year after receiving a resounding vote of confidence from Prince Edward Islanders. By this time, Campbell had led his province through the most intensive period of reform and transformation in its history. His cabinet was one of the most capable ever to govern Prince Edward Island. All of that said, one cannot look at this photo without asking whether any of it would have happened without Alex Campbell's leadership.
All the world's a stage.
Alex Campbell has played many parts, from his youth through his older years. He is a husband, father, grandfather, family member, and friend. He has been Prince Edward Island's longest-serving premier and was for 16 years a justice of the Supreme Court of Prince Edward Island. As a youth, Campbell played the part of Charlie, his imaginary friend who would express an opinion on the matters of the day or ask for an extra helping of potatoes. When they had CB radios at Stanley Bridge, Campbell's CB moniker was Alley-Oop, the same as his adolescent nickname. Campbell performs from time to time as Sandy McSpartan, a wild-looking Scotsman ready to lead in songs, skits, or frolic. For years, including while he was premier, Campbell was a member of the Dumbbells, a troupe of performers and singers who put on a variety show at the end of the summer in the Stanley Bridge Women's Institute Hall. Leish Schuurman, also a member of the Dumbbells, says, "Alex wasn't the premier when he was on that stage." Throughout his life, Alex Campbell has been an active participant in group singing, including in Summerside's Trinity United Church Choir, in neighborhood Christmas carol traditions, in barbershop quartets, around the campfire at Stanley Bridge, and as a member of the Heedless Horsemen, a group that sings together near St. Petersburg, Florida, where Marilyn and Alex spend their winters. At Bellagio, a raised platform in the living room doubles as a performance stage, a tradition that Alex encourages in the next generations by awarding trinkets and prizes, some of which may have been found at the New London Dump. In Florida, Alex and his friend Con Zatt founded a popular tradition in 2001 when they organized Islander Day. Music, laughter, friendship, and Prince Edward Island pride are the key ingredients of the early March gathering that now attracts 600 to 700 Islanders and friends annually. In whatever role he has played, Alex Campbell's essential character has come through. He is a conscientious person who is good-natured and fun-loving. He is an exemplary listener who has the courage to advocate for ideas while they are still in embryo. He is by nature serene and patient, while being happy to step into character as a leader, public figure, and performer. He enjoys solitary time and is well in his own skin, while drawing energy and enthusiasm from interactions with others. He is a thinker who openly embraces the thoughts of others. He wants progress and development, but not at all costs. He measures progress by whether the greatest number of people gets ahead and whether it is good for Prince Edward Island. A photograph taken at the induction ceremony to the Order of Prince Edward Island in October 2013 shows that, with the multiple facets of his character and with the numerous roles that he has played, Alex Campbell was the same person as he approached the age of 80 that he was as a youth. Spontaneous, generous, happy and inclusive, and wanting and expecting things to change for the better. In September 2006, there was a reunion of key personnel involved with the Prince Edward Island Development Plan. Alex Campbell spoke at the closing banquet, thanking those present for their part in preparing Prince Edward Island the better to meet its future. Campbell feels that this represents a succinct statement of the impact of his time as Premier, to prepare Prince Edward Island the better to meet its future. As for the impact of his time in office on Campbell, his friend Leigh Schuurman responds when asked whether it ever went to Alex's head. No, definitely not. Alex could shake hands with anyone and pay attention.
A parting bow.
The year 2013 was a good one for Alex Campbell, as were the previous 79. On December 1st, he celebrated his 80th birthday, with Marilyn, in Florida, in good health. In June, he received a double honor when he was named to the Order of Prince Edward Island and as an officer of the Order of Canada. Most importantly, he spent 6 months in his beloved Stanley Bridge, on his native Prince Edward Island, surrounded by friends and family.
And sing, God save the land we love so much.